This is the Gender Justice Brief, a podcast of gender justice. We fight for gender equity by breaking down legal, structural, and cultural barriers and expanding protections. We want to see all people thrive, regardless of their gender, gender expression, and sexual orientation.
Welcome to the Gender Justice Brief. I'm Cam, Institutional Giving Manager for Gender Justice, filling in this week for our regular host, Erin Hart. And I'm super excited to be joined today by Christina Sambor, our North Dakota State Director for Gender Justice. Hi, Christina.
Hello.
And Brittany Stewart, Senior Staff Attorney for Gender Justice, for her first time on the podcast. Welcome, Brittany.
Howdy, y'all. Glad to be here today.
Brittany, since you're new on the cast, why don't we start with you giving a little bit of an intro about yourself and your work at Gender Justice?
You betcha. My name's Brittany Stewart. I'm a Senior Staff Attorney. I was hired back in May. I actually come from Oklahoma, where I've spent most of my legal career. I was the first out trans person to run for office in Oklahoma back in 2010. And I've also been involved in a high-profile civil rights litigation. I was on the trial team that won a $1 million verdict for a transgender professor in Oklahoma who was denied tenure and ultimately fired because she was trans, and the jury unanimously went with us in the conservative Western District of Oklahoma, and eventually the Tenth Circuit gave her job back. That's a little bit of my background, and I'm glad to be part of this awesome team.
Well, we're glad to have you part of this awesome team. And speaking of awesome team, Christina, would you give us a little background on yourself?
Sure. I'm an attorney in North Dakota. I have been with Gender Justice on staff since about May, but I've been in contract with the organization since last year. I, in my role as North Dakota State Director, am in charge of working with Gender Justice's approach, which includes advancing gender equity through law and policy and coalition building and trying to change the narrative. And one of the ways we like to say that is that we want to do work around our lawsuit so that when we hopefully get the outcome we're looking for, that the public feels like that's the right outcome, that we change the narrative around the issues that we work on. Yeah, prior to joining Gender Justice, I operated my own small law firm in Bismarck, North Dakota. And prior to that, I worked for about 5 years in collaborative space building, kind of system-wide responses to human trafficking, commercial sexual exploitation, and labor exploitation in North Dakota. Yeah, and before that, I was just doing various lawyerly things. So I have somehow inadvertently spent a majority of my life in North Dakota, but I did live in California for a few years when I went to law school, spent some time in DC. Yeah. And I guess one of the other notable things in my trajectory was that I was a 2014 Bush Fellow. And that's how I ended up being able to kind of transition out of traditional legal practice and into that collaborative nonprofit work that I started in like 2015. That's some of my background. I also have a really cute little 22-month-old daughter and a golden doodle.
A very cute daughter and two high power professional lawyers on our team here. And we had a big North Dakota for their healthcare ban for minors. And we had the opportunity to share that with the world in a press conference. Christina, you were absolutely fabulous as the MC for that event. I know it's got to be exhausting given all the work that you had to do to get ready for that. Can you tell us a bit about the press conference and who spoke yesterday?
Sure. So we were really excited to share the work that we're doing with local media and partners. And so we had several organizations join us that have been partners with Gender Justice in this work in North Dakota since we started working in North Dakota. And this go around, I should just clarify, Gender Justice has had several lawsuits in North Dakota, but we've been starting to work as part of a coalition with other organizations. Really in earnest, what it started during this last legislative session, which is where all of these bad laws that including the healthcare ban that we are challenging, came from, was the 2013 legislative session. So along with Gender Justice, several of those organizations, including the ACLU of North Dakota, Human Rights Coalition, joined us at the press conference, as well as our plaintiff family, the Dolmies, who were just absolutely incredible. So our plaintiff who is a 12-year-old boy living in Fargo, spoke along with his parents, and just really, I think, reminding everyone of the human impact of these things when these issues get so politicized. And I've already, unfortunately, strayed into comments on some of the media that was shared, and you see it right there. People just going right back into these terrible talking points and buying into these narratives that have been set to promote a political agenda, which is just unfortunate. And so we really wanted our press conference to highlight this. These are real people who don't want to be at a podium speaking to the media about the rights they've had taken away. They want to live their lives and enjoy their happy, healthy child who has seen a remarkable amount of progress in that direction because of gender-affirming care. And so that was really our focus, was let's keep this message about the real people that are affected and the real significant benefit that this has had on their lives. In addition to the Dahl News, Dr. Amanda Dahl joined us, who's one of two pediatric endocrinologists in the state, and her partner, Dr. Luis Casas, is one of our other plaintiffs, because their ability to, in their view, and in the view of every major medical association in the country and globally, they're no longer able to provide best standards of practice for their patients who come to them seeking medical care for gender dysphoria. And Dr. Dahl came and shared her perspective on the impact of this care on her patients and why it's so important that we're filing suit to try to restore that medical care.
It's huge. The testimony that we heard yesterday was very moving from all of those individuals. I know many on our team expressed being in tears because this is such a huge, significant issue on the lives of these kids. Now, Brittany, as the lead counsel on the case, can you explain our legal arguments on why the healthcare ban is unconstitutional under North Dakota state constitution?
Yeah, you betcha. I'll try not to get too deep in the weeds here, but there's basically five distinct constitutional arguments we're making. The first one under the North Dakota Constitution's Equal Protection Clause that requires equal protection of the laws. We're saying that because this law singles out transgender kids and says they can't access certain medical care that non-transgender kids can continue to access for basically the same purpose, that's an equal protection violation, because you're saying this specific group can't access it, but everyone else can. Second of all, Article 1, Section 1 specifically of the North Dakota Constitution is basically like your right to life, liberty, self-determination. It's been interpreted by North Dakota's Supreme Court to provide a fundamental right to parent your children, which means we're saying these parents in our lawsuit have a right to access the health care that's necessary to make their kids healthy and happy and save their lives. And so that's one of them. Our third count is on personal autonomy and self-determination, also under that same part of the Constitution as the fundamental right to parent, and that these kids have a fundamental right to express themselves as who they are and access the care they need to be who they are. And then we have a couple of due process violations in regards to how this criminalizes the care. First off, it fundamentally alters the ability of physicians to practice medicine according to those best standards of practice that Christina was talking about. And then there's a legacy clause that was allegedly added into the law to allow people who were already accessing the care to not have it suddenly cut off. But it was drafted in such a vague way that the attorneys for the healthcare providers are telling them, we don't know that what you can and cannot do. It's too vague. And so our best advice to you to protect you from criminal liability and going to jail and paying fines is to just avoid doing this care in North Dakota. And so in spite of this legacy clause that was supposed to protect the kids who already had access, that has not been the case. And these doctors are now telling kids and their families only call us when we're in our North Dakota office. When we're in our Minnesota office, we can't answer your questions when we're in our North Dakota office. And that's really limiting to these families because I think it's only 2 or 3 days a month they're over in the Minnesota office. So imagine if you're sick or you're dealing with a medication issue and now you have to wait a week until the doctor gets to the right office to be able to answer your question. It's a really untenable situation. And so those are the counts are in our complaint that we're seeking declaratory judgment for, asking the court to say this law violates all of these fundamental rights and therefore cannot be enacted, cannot be enforced, and is ruled unconstitutional.
Now, Christina, I know that you started following this law from the very beginning as it was beginning to hit the legislature and get considered. The law itself, could you tell us a bit about that law and what the debate was like and any other legislation that's moving through the legislature that we should be aware of?
Yeah. So first of all, North Dakota state legislature only meets every other year. So they're typically in session beginning right at the turn of the year until the end of April. And then they'll meet on the off years a lot of times and interim legislative committees that are studying issues that have been recommended for study from the last session. One of the really notable things is when these laws come up, they're in place for a couple of years before we really have a chance to reexamine or challenge them. And as was the case across the country, North Dakota had just a bevy of anti-trans legislation that was introduced and was really handled altogether. And it was really clear that it was this sort of like amalgamation of different types of laws or laws that attach to different rights, but all of which had the same goal, which was to find ways to exclude trans people from being able to be trans and live their lives. And so what that looked like was the healthcare ban, which is the law that we're challenging. Also, another effort, North Dakota did pass a ban on trans youth participating in sports that align on teams that align with their gender identity. That was vetoed by the governor of North Dakota in 21. And then that veto was sustained by the legislature. But they brought back another sports care bill, which passed and was signed this year. There was also a few different bills that all accomplished the goal of removing trans identity from data collection in North Dakota. So saying essentially there can't be studies that like first defining sex as your sex is cannot your gender cannot be changed from your sex as assigned at birth. And then saying that state agencies, et cetera, may only collect data based upon that definition that your gender is limited to your sex as assigned at birth. Then there were also bills that required different bathroom accommodations that don't align with people's gender identity, and then also pronoun bills requiring school districts, administrators, state agencies. Basically, what they did to make it look less discriminatory was say that state agencies may neither require nor prohibit use of pronouns, but also that they cannot create a policy. So essentially preventing them from mandating that people be identified by their gender identities. So yeah, so all of these laws were introduced and on the House side, where many, they start either on the House or the Senate side. On the House side, the committee that heard these bills lined them up and just ran most of them in one day. So we had like a whole day before that committee. And what you saw just especially increasingly through the day was there was less focus on any one of these rights or why a particular restriction of people's rights was even necessary. And more just this general conversation of we have to protect our kids from grooming and from dangerous adults and from indoctrination, blah, blah, blah. So really the overarching justification for all of these was trans identities are unnatural. Trans identities are imposed upon kids by other people. And trans people pose a risk to the safety of others. And therefore, we don't want to recognize, and also that being forced to recognize someone's gender identity infringes upon my religious rights. That was really the overarching argument behind most of these laws, because there's no justification for the laws, really, and the proponents of these laws weren't able to produce a justification for the laws beyond, honestly, really shallow and really disgusting stereotypes based upon a total lack of knowledge or interest in the experience of trans people. And particular to the healthcare ban, the narrative we heard over and over again is we have to prevent genital mutilation of kids who are too immature or too stupid to know what they're doing to themselves. And everybody who thinks they're trans eventually comes out of it, and those who don't need mental health care. These were the, and I apologize to even say that kind of stuff, but just to give you a sense of what the narrative was that we were dealing with. And on the flip side, on the opponent side, we had person after person with lived experience with these issues saying, gender affirming health care gave me my life back. Gender affirming health care made me comfortable in who I am and made me feel like I could be myself and leave the house and be happy and focus on things other than my gender. And then we had doctor after doctor show up and say, this medical care is regulated, it is trusted, it is administered carefully, and it is necessary. And here's why. Here are the experiences we see of the distress that our patients are experiencing when they come in and are dealing with this persistent sense of their gender being different from their sex and the absolute need to live true to their identity. And so the evidence offered for and against these laws was just really starkly different in terms of its quality and its basis in like real human experience.
And that real human experience is exactly what we heard from our plaintiffs yesterday, both the kids and families who were affected and also our pediatrician partner who said exactly the same thing. And so with that, Brittany, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit more about those plaintiffs and what their experiences have been since the healthcare ban has gone into effect. Do you like to save money? I know I do. That's why I've started using Upside. Upside is an app that gives you cash back on your everyday purchases. I personally save up to 22 cents per gallon on gas, and there are deals for up to 30% back at restaurants. And if you use our offer code, you can save an additional 15 cents per gallon on your first gas purchase and support the transgender while you're at it. Just go to upside.com to get the app and use offer code Cameron 634936. That's Cameron 634936 to get 15 more cents off when you fill up your tank. Make your dollars go further with cashback from Upside.
Yeah, before I don't want to make this about myself, but it's just an interesting aside. I actually recently got back on my own like maintenance dosage of estrogen. I transitioned and started in 2005, had bottom surgery in 2007. And even though I'm now 18 years in, when I went to a new doctor in the new area that I live in, I had to fill out a bunch of paperwork and sign a bunch of documents saying, I understand what this could do to me and I understand the side effects. And so just this idea that legislators in any state have that this care is being handed out willy-nilly to just anybody who wakes up one day and shows up at the doctor and says, give me hormones. Like, it just doesn't work that way when even somebody who's, you know, 16 years post-op still has to sign a bunch of waivers, making sure I know that what the effects of these medicines are going to be. But yeah, moving on to our plaintiffs, we have three families that are plaintiffs. Only one of them is public, and that's the Dolnys who showed up at the press conference yesterday. We have two other anonymous families because they're scared to be forward. They live in some areas of the state where they don't necessarily know how their neighbors might react to finding out that they're involved in this lawsuit, that they're fighting this care ban. One of our plaintiffs, a 15-year-old trans girl from Burleigh County, is, you know, she's in a new school this year. She's not necessarily out to her friends and people at school. And so she doesn't necessarily want them to know about her private medical history and that she is a transgender girl. She just wants to live as the teenage girl that she is without having to have this hang over her. Her dad is a teacher. Our other family we have out of Stark County, they have a 12-year-old trans boy. And this family is just the picture of middle-class, rural North Dakota. Dad's a maintenance worker in oil fields. Mom works in a preschool. So the idea that these are some kind of woke culture warriors trying to force being trans on their kids, just, it doesn't even fit with who they are. They just, this situation came up. Their kid was in second grade and acting out and refusing to go to the bathroom and kept telling them, no, I'm a boy. I don't want to go to daddy-daughter dance unless I can wear a suit because I'm a boy. And so they had to struggle with this. They weren't trying to force this on their kid. Their kid was telling them who he was. And so they had to learn about it. They had to do research. The 15-year-old trans girl, her parents initially were resistant to the idea that she was trans, even though they admit that they know now she was showing signs since she was 4 years old that she was trans, and they knew she was feminine, but they thought she would come out as gay at some point. And it took them a while to wrap their head around, oh, she's trans. And she went to live with her grandmother for a while because that was her trusted adult, and gave her parents some time to have some space to research about it and learn more about it and accept her for who she is. And now they do. And now they finally went through all that only to have the state of North Dakota come in and say, oh, that life-saving care that's helped your daughter and helped you rebuild your relationship and have a family again, yeah, we're just going to yank that away. And now if you want to access that, you better be willing to travel 6 or 7 hours by car round trip on one of the 2 or 3 days a month that you can maybe get an appointment in Minnesota. Good luck to you. And so they're loving families that didn't get into this because they were trying to push an agenda. They're just regular North Dakotans who were trying to go about their lives and thrust into the middle of a political battle that they didn't choose to be a part of.
Absolutely. Joined too with our young plaintiffs, we also have Dr. Dahl as well. Can you tell us a little bit about Dr. Dahl and her perspective on this issue?
Oh, it's actually Dr. Casas is actually our plaintiff. Dr. Dahl does work with him, but Casas is our named plaintiff in the case. He was busy seeing patients yesterday and couldn't be at the press conference. And so she was able to come and take some time away to be there. Dr. Casas, as kind of Christina mentioned earlier, he and Dr. Dahl are basically the two pediatric endocrinologists in the state that even have the training and knowledge to be able to provide this care. And he's a very busy man. He works in 4 different cities around North Dakota, plus Moorhead, Minnesota, and is traveling the circuit to try to see everybody because there aren't very many doctors that even provide this care. And so it's already very limited. And it's not all he does. He helps kids with diabetes. He helps kids with precocious puberty and other hormonal imbalance issues. And he just wants to be able to abide by his Hippocratic oath, which is do no harm. And this law is telling him, not only will we not let you do no harm, we're going to make you sit by and actively watch as your patients are harmed by not being able to access care that you know all the research on and know that this is the right care that will save their lives.
Absolutely. Now, Christina, you are in North Dakota. You are living there. You are a part of the community. What are you seeing as far as the reactions from other community members and advocacy organizations there in the state?
I'll admit that my bubble tends to be people that I have things in common with. And the only real vitriol I'm seeing in response again was like looking at the comments on social media. In terms of interacting with friends of mine who've held office in North Dakota, colleagues and friends of mine from other organizations, everyone's extremely excited about our work here. I think there's definitely a sense that this is the beginning of something good. And knowing that gender justice is very focused not only on bringing our best work to this lawsuit, but also being invested and involved in North Dakota over a long period of time to continue this work. So it's been overwhelmingly really positive. I think that what I heard a lot at the legislative session was a lot of frustration with because there was these majority votes or super majority votes in support of these laws. I think there's a misperception about how even conservative people in general that are not part of, I think, a minority of that party, even that really want to be focused on things like this, feel. And I heard a lot of dissatisfaction from Republicans and Democrats alike around the focus on trans people who make up such a small percentage of our state population and our national population aren't necessarily people who elected officials have spoken to before they decide to weigh in heavily on their lives and their ability to exercise basic rights. And so I think this is a welcome challenge because I do think for a lot of people, the issue of trans rights can feel very removed from their day-to-day experience. But at the same time, when you really look at the principles that are involved here that Brittany described earlier, make up our legal arguments, which is you're entitled to the freedom to parent your kids and make decisions absent some really compelling interest that the government has in your life or in what you're doing with it. And so it's in everyone's interests to question when the government with, I would venture to say, almost no evidence supporting the need for any of these laws. There's no evidence of trans people posing a danger to cis people or to non-trans people. There's no evidence that parents who, after seeing their child struggle with mental health and being for years, and then find out that their child is struggling like that because of their gender identity, and then they find out that there's medical care available that can reduce their suffering, the risk of suicide by 70%, 70 plus percent. What business is it of yours if that's not your life to say those people can't pursue this care? Dr. Dahl made a comment in the press conference that I thought was so important, which was, if we discover a treatment that alleviates anxiety, depression, and suicidal ideation in children for 60 to 70%, makes an improvement of 60 to 70%, you'd think that treatment would be celebrated, not outlawed. And the reason that we're not seeing that really just has to do with the fact that it is in vogue right now in certain political circles to say it's wrong to be trans and we're going to take away your rights to be trans. And I don't think any of that is lost on a lot of people. And again, even though they may not have sort of day-to-day experience with the issue and with the experience of trans people, I don't think they like the focus on this. I think that it's pretty clear to everybody that children are being used as political pawns. And so that's really what I have seen a lot of, not only after the lawsuit, but also while all this was going on, which was like, this is crazy. This is a sign of a political party gone crazy. So I think there's a general spirit of welcoming a rational conversation around these issues and hopefully a good court outcome that actually applies facts and reason to some of these questions.
Absolutely. And we're not doing this alone, too. Can you name a few of our partners that are involved with this case?
Yeah, we're working alongside Cerisi Conlin LLP, a law firm out of Minneapolis, as well as a nonprofit organization called The Lawyering Project. They have a couple of attorneys who have been working with us as well. Yeah, we have partners in this, and we're bringing out the big guns because we got to fight this tooth and nail and make sure, as Christina said, that this is decided on the facts and the law. And one of the things I said both during the legislative session in Oklahoma when I was doing some work down there against some of these laws is like, these politicians can get away with whatever they want to say on the floor of the legislature. But in a courtroom, there's rules of evidence. And so a lot of those unsupported statements and misinformation, that's not going to get to be the deciding factor in a court of law if they can't back up their assertions with actual evidence.
So speaking of a court of law, what are the next steps and what's going to happen with this lawsuit from here?
Yeah, so we have asked for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction. So at some point, the judge could go ahead without hearing and go ahead and issue that temporary restraining order. And then we'll be getting a hearing date for asking for a preliminary injunction. The TRO would just put the law on hold until we have the hearing. And then the hearing would be where both sides get to bring their evidence as to why it should be put on hold during the litigation. So that should be coming within the next 2 to 3 weeks. We will likely have that preliminary injunction hearing, and that'll be the next step. And then we'll have discovery where both sides have to share their evidence with each other and eventually maybe a trial.
And if it does go to trial, how long does a process like this typically take?
Yeah, it depends. The first state to pass a care ban was Arkansas in 2021. And their care ban got preliminarily enjoined in 2021, went to trial in 20, and didn't get permanently enjoined by the court, by the federal court there in Arkansas until 2023. So like you're looking at maybe at least 1 to 2 years likely of legal back and forth on this. And there could be some appeals to the state Supreme Court at some point, and it could be a long process. The law doesn't move quickly, and there's a lot that goes into getting all these filings done. But it's not going to all happen right at once.
There's a lot of work ahead of us, but it's exciting work. And Christina, if folks are interested in getting involved in this work, where can they learn more? How can they plug into this?
I'd recommend maybe just familiarizing yourself with Gender Justice as an organization and checking out our website. Which has a lot of information about the success that Gender Justice has had in its lawsuits in Minnesota. In terms of getting involved in North Dakota, you can also find contact information for me on our website. And while we're focusing on trans rights and specifically minors' rights to access healthcare in this lawsuit, Gender Justice's work spans far beyond that. And so I think it would be great for people to check out our website, see what we do, and see what issues speak to them in their life. And part of what we want to encourage is that we're all fighting for the same rights across these issues. And so if you care about your rights that are implicated as far as gender equity, you should also care and equally care about trans people's rights. So anyway, we all connect different issues and we all connect things that we want to jump in and put our time, energy, and money towards. So check out our website, see the work we do, and then get in touch.
And it would be remiss of me as our institutional giving manager not to say, we do need the support of our community to make sure that we can fund all this. So there is also a donate button on that website that we'd love to have you click to help us make this work happen. The other thing I'll mention is that we did just today publish a YouTube recording of the press conference itself. So if you want to hear that testimony, you can visit our Gender Justice page in YouTube in order to see that. It's really powerful. From either of you, maybe Brittany, I can start with you. Any final thoughts or words you'd like to share?
Yeah, I just want to say I'm super proud of our plaintiffs, both the ones who spoke yesterday and shared their story publicly in that spotlight, as well as the ones stepping up anonymously, because none of this can happen without them. Just because an organization thinks a law is unconstitutional, the way our system works, you have to bring people that are actually harmed by that law forward to fight that law. And so without them, we could do none of this. And so I'm very proud of them for standing up for their kids, for standing up for their rights. And I hope people will familiarize themselves with their stories and understand they're not trying to push a political agenda. They just want to live their lives freely and without government interference, just like any North Dakotan does.
And Christina, any final thoughts?
Yeah, just I've been very proud to have joined Gender Justice, and my sense of that has amplified so much over the last week, because Gender Justice does really impactful, really good, really professional work. We've got lots of people with different areas of expertise that all contribute to that success. And as a person who was raised in North Dakota and spent a lot of my life here. I am so grateful that we have the talent, both from Gender Justice and also from our partners, that we have supportive partners that are, yesterday were using their own social media channels to say, good job, Gender Justice, and we're with you, which is just such an amazing statement to the willingness of North Dakota-based organizations to work together and the brilliance of our co-counsel. And of course, like Brittany said, the fortitude of our plaintiffs, all of it just feels really good after a period of 9 months that has been really terrible. It feels really good to feel like the momentum shifting back to let's test these ideas against the standards that are so important to preserving people's rights. And let's get things moving back in a more fair and compassionate direction in our state.
I want to thank both of you for all of your hard work. I know this has been quite a week ramping up to make this happen, and all of your energy and focus is really appreciated. And huge thank you and congratulations to those incredible families and kids and our partners for standing up for the rights of all North Dakotans and North Dakota youth. The work that this is doing is extremely important, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Thank you, Brittany and Christina, for being on the podcast today.
Thanks, Cam. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Cam, and good job knocking it out of the park being our guest host.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to the Gender Justice Brief. This show is produced by Gunter Yannel and Audrey Rodriguez. To keep up with our work in real time, be sure to check out the show notes for where to find us on the web, social media, and to sign up for text updates. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share to help us spread our message. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.